Talking about punching a time clock and working 9 to 5. We're talking about working around the clock, rain or shine, hot or cold, because crops and animals won't wait. Jimmy knows all about it because he lives it. And Jimmy knows what you're going through because he goes through it too. He's here to talk about it. It's seed and feed, chemicals and compost, vaccinations and irrigation. It's time for Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey, good day to all you great stewards of the land. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO. It's Friday, Marcus. It's Friday.
Finally.
Finally. Our weather brought to you every day on Today in Ag by the Hobart Farm and Garden down at Hobart, Oklahoma in Kiowa County. It is 78 degrees. The Nathan Brewer dew point is 42 degrees. The winds are out of the south, southwest at 7 miles an hour, gusting up to 11 miles an hour. And hang with me to the latter part of the show when I give you the Hobart Farm and Garden Long Ranger, because there is some rain in the forecast and some cooler weather coming up. So stand by for that. We are streaming live on Facebook. We got a great show for today. Yesterday was awesome. Got a lot of good feedback from everybody. They enjoyed the great professor from K-State yesterday talking about beef nutrition, and it was a great show. He was good. He was funny. And today I got Marcus Thibodeau. Did I say that right?
Close enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to say Coon something else, but I didn't say it because you're better than that, right? Didn't you tell me you were a notch above?
I try to be. Depends on the day.
Anyway, he is the WMA manager and wildlife biologist for Pack Saddle, and we're also going to have Dwayne Elmore on starting in the second segment from Stillwater. He is the OSU Extension wildlife specialist, and all you landowners, farmers, ranchers, you want to hang around for today's show because we got a lot of good things to talk about, interesting things to talk about. But first, I went over to the OSU Extension peanut blasting seminar this morning. It wasn't really a seminar, it's just they test out their peanuts. I learned some interesting facts about peanuts today. There was some people there from the Oklahoma Peanut Commission. You know what peanut blasting is?
I don't.
Okay, well, you're getting ready to find out.
Did you guys get to try the peanuts?
Yeah, no.
I don't think you want to.
No, not raw. Well, I love raw peanuts, but not before the show. So, anyway, there was a lot of great people I met over there. Zach Henderson, the Beckham County and Ouachita County Extension Specialist for OSU, was running this deal, but he was learning right alongside me. He had the pros there with him, but it was very interesting. I learned that they use these charts, color charts, and what they do is these guys go out this morning, they pick their peanuts, they pick the vines with the peanuts on them, and they bring them in and they bag them up, or they pick the mature peanuts off the vine, and then they put them in a bucket, like a Minocane, hard metal. They put it in there and they power wash them. They just sit there and power wash the heck out of them. And then they bring them over to this big chart that's on these tables, and they put them in color charts. The darker, the more mature. The lighter, the less mature. And it was really interesting. I kind of got hosed this morning.
By the power washer?
No, by Bandy Silk. He's going 100 miles an hour. I don't know who goes more. 100 miles. He goes 105, and Chad Ripito probably goes 104. And because Chad showed up, he didn't have any bags. Bandy shows up, and he's got a different technique of removing the peanuts from the vines. Everybody else is over there picking them like cotton, you know, and Bandy just raking them off, you know. It was pretty cool. But he got a phone call. He said, "Hey, can you watch my peanuts in line?" So I had to hang around and get his peanuts blast it and everything, but it was really cool. And looks like, from what I've seen, there's three types of peanuts and are grown in our area: Spanish, runners, and Virginians. And looks like the Spanish, they're ready to start digging here pretty quick. And then on the runners, they're still a couple weeks out. My informant that lives down there on Spring Creek Road, that's Chad Ripto's father, he's telling me it's always the 10th of October every year. So he didn't even have to get his blasted. He knew when his was going to be ready. Everybody else, I think it's just a big social event.
That's right.
But anyway, I met some really good people there. And a couple of the gentlemen from the Oklahoma Peanut Commission will be on the show in the next couple weeks. So it'll be a lot of great information on peanuts, because peanut butter is my favorite.
Mine too.
Yeah. And so, but no, it was all good. But I got a couple of short deals to talk about before we take a break. And then after we come back from the break, Dwayne and Marcus will be on here with us, and it's going to be interesting. But there was an article this morning, lawmakers suspect cannabis growers creating an issue for rural water resources. Rural Oklahoma lawmakers and other officials are claiming marijuana growers are creating an issue for rural water resources. And these are the ones out in the rural area. I'm not talking – I got friends that's got, that grow marijuana here locally, and they're all doing it by the book and the whole nine yards. But there, we have some foreign-owned operations out in the counties that are trying to sidestep some stuff. They said that the Oklahoma Water Resources Board, the OWRB, said it's received 16 complaints from marijuana businesses improperly accessing water for grow operation. That makes up about a third of all the complaints that OWRB has received in 2021. OWRB says it relies on complaints instead of cross-checking data bases with the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics and the Oklahoma Medical Marijuana Authority, because it's hard to match up the data. While it's unclear how many illegal cannabis operations are accessing water supplies, Representative Anthony Moore is more concerned about the accelerated aquifer depletion. So that was pretty interesting. So like I said, that's about the ones out in the country. Not there's, because there's a lot of ones, there's a lot of them out in the country, and I don't know what the percentages are, legal or illegal, but looks like from what I've been watching on the news lately, the narcotics task force, they're
staying busy.
They're staying busy. I don't think we got enough people to do it.
No.
So, anyway, you got any illegal marijuana operations going on up at Pack Saddle? Because that'd be a good place for one.
Not that I know of.
You don't have a drone?
No, I don't. That's dangerous for me to operate one of those.
But anyway, so now that was a really cool deal over at Sarah at Fair Barn this morning. Caddo County in Oklahoma is the number one peanut grower in Oklahoma, and Beckham County comes in at number two, and I don't think there's one other county, and we didn't talk about it. There's not a lot of counties built for growing peanuts, and it's got to be a really good sandy soil, and it's interesting, but it's getting ready to fire up. This is the busiest time of the year for farmers. We got peanut harvest coming up. Everybody's sowing rye, wheat, Truticale right now. And on my adventures to Greer County yesterday, there's a lot of cotton open. There's a lot of white starting to show up in these fields. So this is a busy time of the year for farming and ranching, and there's cattle trailers going up and down the road. So it's crazy. Well, when we get back, Dwayne Elmore from OSU will be on with me, along with Marcus. And we will be right back after this. You're listening to Today in Ag on 96.5 KECO.
We raise registered Red Angus. We sell bulls, heifers, seed stock quality type. Red Angus offers superior marbling. Docility is probably the biggest selling point for Red Angus. The maternal traits and some heat tolerance. Benji White, B&L Red Angus. BLRedAngus.com on Facebook. Follow us at B&L Red Angus.
Lori White, B&L Red Angus. BLRedAngus.com. You can find us on Facebook by searching B&L Red Angus.
We learned in grade school 1 plus 1 equals 2 and 2 plus 2 equals 4. So what does quality feed equal? Results you can be proud of. It's simple math with a little common sense. Barnes Feed Service in Hobart, Oklahoma has done the math and mixed years of common sense into their feeds so you'll get the results you deserve. And remember, their name ends with service, something they take pride in every day. See their ads in the Penny News and check them out on Facebook. Mosey on down to Hobart Stockyard's weekly cattle sale at Highway 183 North in Hobart, Oklahoma. The sale is every Wednesday at 9:30. If you need to consign, call Rex Fleming at 580-331-8547. They receive cattle all day Mondays and Tuesdays. Buyers can bid in person or online. Register at lmaauction.com or download the LMA Ringside app. Hobart Stockyards, where we want your business and we do appreciate it.
We truly are a family at First National Bank. When you have a family member that's sick, everyone knows. When something's happened within your family, when you have celebrations, we truly are a family at First National Bank and Trust. We're very proud of the institution that we work for. We're very proud of each other. It is like a family. We call it our bank family. I'm Tammy DeGarmo, and I help make the difference at First National Bank and Trust of Elk City and Sayre.
Member FDIC.
Now, back to more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
All right. Welcome back. Looks like looking at the Mesonet right now, Eric, Oklahoma in Beckham County. It's a hot spot, 81 degrees. Mangum is the cool spot, believe it or not, at 74. Hobart, 79. Cheyenne is 78. And clear up there at Arnett in Marcus's territory, it's a whopping 78 degrees up there. And it's just, it's nice weather. It's fall weather. Marcus, are you ready for fall? I know.
I'm ready. I'm ready to do some quail hunting.
Your bird dog's probably already skin and bones.
That's right.
Working it on there. But today we got a great show in store. We have Marcus. He's the WMA manager at Pack Saddle, Ellis County, and you help out with Black Kettle. Yep. On the federal side. And also online now is Dwayne Elmore, Extension and Wildlife Specialist. Your resume, Dwayne, you on there?
I am. Thanks for having me.
Yo, thanks for being on. Your resume, I didn't want to read all that. I mean, you got quite a resume. So anyway, that's welcome to the show. And this is an ag show, but wildlife and agriculture all go together because we got to be a big team. So that's why I have somebody from either the wildlife department or a wildlife biologist on here at least once a week, if not every other week. And you're going to be probably, besides Marcus, since he's sitting here, the most elaborate person we talk to about wildlife management. So,
okay.
See, we're pepping you up, so you got a lot to go about. Well, first of all, tell our listeners, if you would, where you're from and how you ended up where you're at right now.
Sure. Yeah, I grew up in Middle Tennessee in a very rural area. A lot of timber industry there and also row crop and beef cattle and historically dairy. And so went to school there in Middle Tennessee and was in FFA, 4-H, and always interested in outdoor activities and hunted and fished, and ended up University of Tennessee and then Mississippi State and then Utah State. So I moved around different degrees, and I've been here in Oklahoma for 15 years and enjoy what I do. I get to work with a lot of great people. I do a lot of public education, outreach for the university, wildlife-related topics for landowners and also agencies. And then we also do a lot of research, and primarily I do research on game birds, so quail, grouse, wild turkey.
Well, I seen your deal on SUNUP. It was about a month ago, and mm-hmm. that was a really good program that you were involved with on that. That was really interesting. And I hear through the so are you a what kind of bird dogs do you hunt behind?
I've always had German short hair. You know, it's kind of one of those things, the first dog you get, a lot of people stick with it. And when I was in Utah, I got into bird hunting in a big way, and short hair's a popular breed out there for its versatility, and so I've just stuck with it. We've had a short hair around ever since.
Oh, great. Well, have you ever hunted behind a long hair?
I have, yes. I've tried to keep up one time all the different breeds I've hunted behind, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but there's so many, it's a dizzying array. But yeah, I have hunted behind that breed.
Yes, I have a Griff, and the next time you're out, you're going to get the privilege to hunt behind a long hair if the temperature's right. Because yeah. Marcus has already told me you walk faster than your bird dog.
I do cover some ground.
You know, they have GPS so you can track your dog. You don't have to stay up with it.
Yeah, I finally have went to the GPS.
Well, I didn't know this until Marcus and I was talking before the show. You know, there's been a lot of research at Beaver and Pack Saddle on quail. From researchers from all over the country, and I don't know from all over the world, but at least I know from the United States. And he says you got a lot to do with the GPS tracking on quail. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about what that entails?
Yeah, so historically, the way we would track quail to follow them and monitor survival and where they would nest and what kind of vegetation they would use, we would put these radio transmitters, so it's basically a radio signal, and called VHF, very high frequency, and it just emits a periodic beep that if you have the right kind of receiver and know the frequency, you can hear the beep and track the bird. You can triangulate with an antenna and see which direction it is, and you can actually find the bird. That was done for decades, and we still use that a lot. But with more modern technology, we now have the option of putting transmitters on birds that communicate with GPS, so satellites. So it's able to triangulate using different satellites and know where that bird is. And then the transmitter actually uploads the information either to the satellite, or you can go out in the field with a special device and download the data so you can see where that bird has been over the past week or month or however long it's been since you last heard from the signal. And so that enables us to monitor birds with less labor. We don't have to approach as closely and disturb the bird. And also, you can get more frequent locations. In some cases, you know, every 15 minutes, if you so desired. And, you know, the technology has gotten to the point where we can now put those transmitters on something as small as a quail.
Wow, that's crazy, because Marcus helped me out here. Two or three years ago or whenever that was, you were telling me about the hen there at the research station east of the Pack Saddle Bar that you guys, I don't think it was GPS, it was a transmitter.
Well, so we've been seeing a lot more of the long distance movements.
Right.
You know, forever you always thought that a covey of quail lived and died on 40 acres. And people have seen some long distance movements using the VHF collars. But with the GPS collars, we've seen that those long range movements might be a little bit more common than what we once thought.
I mean,
we've picked up quail that have moved miles in a day and ended up at the same spot they were at to start the day, but just traveling all over the place.
Well, that one story, and I think it was you telling me about the hen.
Went from Pack Saddle to Arnett.
And that's, what, 21 miles?
Just about.
Yeah, 21 miles, and hung out there during the summer and ended back up.
Came back.
That same spot with a covey.
Yep.
That just blew my mind. That's crazy.
It's crazy. We've had quail... banded quail harvested that were banded at Pack Saddle, harvested in Canadian, Texas.
That's crazy.
So,
and while that's just interesting, you know, to know that quail can do that, it really has implications to landowners and hunters, because a lot of times people that don't have quail on their property, they'll ask the wildlife department about translocating, in other words, trapping and bringing quail on their property. But what we know now about quail is they have the capacity to find your property. So if you create the right conditions, if you have habitat for them, if there's quail anywhere in the vicinity of where you're at, they can find you. So there's probably no place in Oklahoma that you really need to worry about translocating quail. Now, there might be other parts of the world, like if you're in New Jersey, for example, where they've been extirpated from the state. Well, that's different. But in Oklahoma, we've got quail all over, low densities in a lot of places. But they will find your property if you provide the right kind of habitat for them.
Right. Well, if you guys are just joining in with me, on Today in Ag on 96.5 KECO, I have Marcus Thibodeau, wildlife manager for Pack Saddle in Ellis County, and biologist there, on the show with me. And also I got Dwayne Elmore. He's in, called in from our Stillwater, and he is the extension wildlife specialist for Oklahoma State University. And we're talking right now, we're talking quail. We got lots to cover, and we're probably going to take up most of the show because this is a big interest of me. One more question about quail. With this GPS and with the radio transmitters, what have you guys, besides they'll travel distance, have you learned anything else from that?
Yeah, so we've gotten a lot better idea of how they use shrubs, so things like sandplum and sumac. And we've always known that they associate with that kind of vegetation. But with the GPS technology, where we have so many locations and we can see what a bird is doing at every hour of the day, it really makes it apparent just how important those shrubs are and how close they stick to them all the time. They just seldom go very far from a patch of shrubs. So, you know, if I was a landowner, what I would take from that is, if I don't have shrubs well distributed across my property, then most of my property is not usable by quail.
I got you.
And big implications out here in western Oklahoma. Guys want quail but are spending lots of money to get rid of those shrubs for their cattle. So,
right.
You know, this kind of research, we tell them that, hey, if you want quail, you kind of just got to stop spending that money to get rid of your shrubs and you might have some.
Because there's ways, you know, it's like me. I use the 20-foot rule on my fence lines where my farm ground is. I don't mess with it. I don't spray it. I leave it alone. It looks like crap, but I'm not out there to look like the Joneses, you know. And so, and I use that along my fence lines, and I call it the Super Quail Highway is what I call it. That way they can go around anywhere they want on my property and do anything they want and still have some good protection from predators. And but it's a good one. Dwayne, one of your deals that we were going to talk about was the economics of converting marginal crop acres to wildlife habitat. Can you hit on that a little bit?
Yeah, we recently created a fact sheet on this. So if somebody wants to know more information, they can look it up on OSU's Extension fact sheet website. And if they just type in my name, last name, and then wildlife and marginal crop fields, it should pop right up in the search column. But basically, the idea is, you know, that a lot of acres on crop fields are not as productive as the, you know, if you just average the field, a field might have pretty high yields. Let's say it's corn, you know, high yield corn on this particular field. But if we knew at real small scales the production that's coming off, and now we have the technology with a lot of the harvesting equipment to actually know how many bushels are coming off at a given point on the field. With that kind of technology, we're seeing that, you know, these fields are highly variable. Anybody that's been farming a long time knows this, that there are areas that always produce a lot and areas that don't. On the average, the field's moderate. But some of those areas that don't produce well, which are often on the edge, because some of it has to do with shading, it's not all fertility. Some of it's just shading by adjacent tree lines and forests. If you can just take some of those areas, sometimes it's as little as 5% of the field that are marginal, out of production and put it in native plant cover, not only will you have more quail, more deer, more turkey on your property, but in many cases you actually will make more on the field because your input costs go down. And there's actually consultants, crop consultants out there that specialize in this type of work that help farmers maximize not yield off of the field, but dollars off the field. And often, very often, that means taking a few of those acres out of production, which is a win for them, and it's a win for wildlife.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's great. It's great information. You agree with that, Marcus?
Oh, absolutely.
I can't see. Yeah, you look like a bobble doll.
I keep shaking
over
my head on the radio.
Yeah, but we're live on Facebook, except you're not on there. They can just hear you, but Marcus is over there. He looked like one of those Marcus Thibodeau Bible dolls.
That's right.
So anyway, that's great information. And like Dwayne said, if you want more information on that, go on to the OSU Extension website, type in Elmore Wildlife, and you'll be good to go. And if anybody's got any questions for Marcus or Dwayne today while we got the show, you're more than welcome to text into the KECO Ag text line at 580-225-9697. And Dwayne, if you can hang on for a few minutes, I need to go to a break, and we'll be right back here in just a few minutes. You're listening Today in Ag on 96.5 KECO, and we'll be right back.
This is the Elk City Livestock Auction Market Report for Friday, September 17th. 1,555 head were sold. 4 head of steers at 334 brought 208. 19 at 471 brought 168. 7 at 557 brought 162. 13 at 633 brought 149. 43 at 698 brought 137.75. 15 at 786 brought 135. 3 head of heifers at 360 brought 156. 6 at 488 brought 146. 8 at 569 brought 133.50. 9 at 673 brought 139.50. 4 at 732 brought 133.50. 6 at 735 brought 120. Butcher cows were 17 to 78. Bred cows 750 to 1560. Butcher bulls 28 to 9650. Pairs brought 575 to 1585. Elk City Livestock Auction, South Highway 6 in Elk City, Oklahoma. Sale every Friday at 9 a.m. To consign, call Brandon Hickey at 580-497-6095.
Is your cattle mineral investment being washed away? Weather can cause conventional mineral to absorb water and blow away. Simply put, your cows probably aren't eating it. That's why Purina created Wind and Rain Storm Mineral, a weatherized mineral that can stand up to the elements. Its larger particle size makes it harder to blow away and easier for water to pass through it. Keep money in your pocket. Contact Farmers Union Co-op of Elk City today.
We've been part of Western Oklahoma's ag industry since statehood. I'm Marty Maddox from Great Plains Bank in Elk City. We proudly support our local FFA labor auctions and premium sales. Our local lenders have a combined 127 years of banking experience. We handle all ag-related loans, like land purchases, farm operating loans, and stocker lines of credit. And we recently helped over 700 area farmers and ranchers with their PPP loans. Great Plains Bank in Elk City is here to lend agriculture a helping hand. Member FDIC.
Hi, I'm James with Western Equipment. Listen up, any high school junior and senior, and any parent or grandparent of any high school junior or senior. By your junior and senior year, it's time to start planning for a job. Right now, if you don't know what you want to do, check out the John Deere AgTech program through Western Equipment. It's a two-year program, and afterwards, we guarantee you a solid job at one of our 21 locations in Texas, Oklahoma, or New Mexico. Now is the time. Visit west-equip.com/careers for more information to apply.
Today in Ag is back with Jimmy Clark.
Welcome back. Great show today. I got Dwayne Elmore, OSU, from OSU. He's an extensive wildlife specialist from up there. And I got Marcus Thibodeau, wildlife manager from right north of here, from Pack Saddle and Ellis County Wildlife Management Areas. And we're on here. And right now, the current temperature, brought to you by the Hobart Farm and Garden. Have you ever been down there?
I have.
You have? It's a pretty cool room back here in the back, isn't it?
It's awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, if you're a browning lover, that's the place to go. 81 degrees, heat index is 80, and Nathan Brewer dew point is 42 degrees. Winds are basically calm for our area. South, southwest, 8 miles an hour, 12 mile an hour gust. Mr. Dwayne, are you back there with us?
I am.
So that show you did two or three weeks, or actually it's been a month because I got sick in between, on Sunup on Saturday morning, you were talking about deer feeders and mildew and bad corn and all that good stuff. Can you hit on that for me for a minute?
Yeah, so anybody that produces grain knows what aflatoxin is. I mean, it's always a concern on especially corn and grain sorghum. So it's produced by a fungus called Aspergillus, and it grows on lots of different grains, not just corn. And it's all in the environment. You're probably breathing it right now at low concentrations. It loves to grow on grain that, you know, has carbohydrates. That's what it's feeding on, the sugars. And so while ag producers know about this thing, because it can be a problem if you have grain that has high concentrations, the USDA regulates that for livestock feed and human consumption. So it's of concern. But hunters and people feeding wildlife, they often don't realize that they might be putting aflatoxin heavy grain into the environment, feeding it to their deer, feeding it to their turkeys. And so, you know, that's a potential concern. And it's toxic to a lot of different animals. Turkeys in particular seem to be really vulnerable to it. And so what we recommend, and again, we have a fact sheet on this. You can search OSU's website, aflatoxins in wildlife feed, and my last name, and it'll pop up. But we recommend that people make sure first they're buying grain that has been USDA tested. That's the important first step, is not to buy grain that's loaded with those toxins. And then keep it dry, keep it clean. Don't put too much out in the environment at any one time. Limit how much is out there getting rained on. And also, it's best not to feed during the summer, because that's when the aflatoxin is typically formed. If you can limit wildlife feeding to the cold winter months, the risk is very low.
That was better than what you said on your show you did on SunUp. I enjoyed that. Appreciate that information, everybody, because it is. I mean, it's you see some people like me. I use deer feeders, and unless they're not eating, it just continuous goes through there. And I try to get I get my corn from the local co-op that's been tested in the whole nine yards. And, you know, it's expensive this year. I wonder what people are going to replace their corn with this year, because that corn is high dollar this year. And or they're going to be feeding less deer. But I've seen some guys just go out there and pile 2, 3, 4, 50-pound bags on the ground and just pile it out there. And you go out there in a week, and you can just see the mildew, the mold forming around the edges and working its way towards the top. So that's interesting to know. I appreciate that information. And well, this is one of my favorite topics on my show, because this has been the year of armyworms. And you have a deal on there about food plots and armyworms. Have you heard anybody getting wiped out yet?
And a lot of people just aren't planting food plots. Yeah. And I don't know about out where you guys are. Marcus probably has a local observation of that. But where we're at here in north central Oklahoma, a lot of the folks, they've just delayed planting because the word's gotten out how bad armyworms are. And so a lot of people that normally might have planted their fall plots back in late August, they've waited, and they're going to wait till late September to try to let the armyworm numbers subside a little bit. But Marcus, have you seen that out there where you're at?
Yeah, it's delayed. And not just armyworms, but there's still lots of grasshoppers out here. So, I mean, that was the approach for the wildlife management areas. We've got so many to plant that we couldn't just not do it.
Right.
So I told my guys, you know, we're just going to take our time and keep an eye on it and keep an eye on the stuff planted around us so that we can jump on it if something happens.
So I know you're an avid listener of the show. Did you remember my little trick about getting rid of army worms? Cheap ways?
The soap?
Yep.
Yeah.
It works.
Hopefully I don't have to try it, but we'll see.
So, about 6 weeks ago, the army worms were just getting into people's yards. They were getting into people's alfalfa. Mine was one of them. They were everywhere. And our extension specialist, Zach Henderson, he was at Custer County then, but he's at Beckham and Wichita now. You know, one of his deal was to mix a tablespoon of water or soap, Dawn dish soap, with a gallon of water, and it'd rid your problem. I mean, so a couple guys tried it, and, you know, because armyworms kind of hide during the day. And so that Dawn dish soap made them come out of their hiding spot. And then both these guys I talked to said within 15 minutes after they exposed themselves, they were dead. So it works. And but man, it'd just be hard to. I mean, I guess you can mix a sprayer up full of Dawn soap and water, but I don't know how good that'll work. But there's a lot of people planting out here right now. Basically, there some people's got some moisture to plant their fields, not just food plots, but their farm fields, agriculture fields, and most of them are dusting in. But I think we're about half done, or maybe over half done, putting rye, Truticao, and wheat in the ground around here. But they have to, you know.
There's some wheat that's already up a little bit.
Yeah, so. A little bit, and just need to keep an eye on it, because if they wait on a rain, and just like Professor Beck from Stillwater said the other day, you know, then you have to wait another week for it to dry out, and then you're already that far behind, so you might as well. Hopefully it ain't a hard rain.
Yes.
So anyway, but
you just got to be the eternal optimist and hope that it will rain.
yeah, and there's a lot of optimistic people around here, because the dust is flying in Western Oklahoma. But I didn't put any food plots in there. I wasn't this year. I mean, the grasshoppers ate me up. The army worms ate me up already.
We had a really good summer, so there's a lot of native food out there.
Oh yeah,
so.
the quail outlook. Personally, what I've seen, the quails look great. I told Marcus before the show started, my father-in-law that lives up there by Billings, close to you guys, yesterday, he's working ground in front of his nephew planting wheat. He seen a covey of 30 birds yesterday along the edge, and they were big enough to fly. And he seen another covey. He seen some pears. And he said, if you get out early enough, the pheasant are unreal. So, you know, that's up there in Noble County. And out here, we got some spotted reports. A couple guys farms or ranches, land, they haven't seen much. But then you talk to the next guy, and they're just quail everywhere. So this might be not a great year, but a good year.
I sure hope so. It's been, we've had depressed populations for the last couple of years. I think all the hunters are anxious for it to pick back up a little bit.
So here's my question to you. You're the bird. You're the upland game bird guru for the state of Oklahoma. You're famous. You know that, right?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Yeah, no.
You're famous.
As long as I'm not infamous, I'm happy.
Well, we had that bad drought from basically 2009-10 all the way up to we got our first big rain in July of 2015. So fall season of 2015 was, where'd those quail come from? They wasn't no quail around. And then all of a sudden, I mean, it wasn't great in the fall of 2015. 2016 was awesome.
Yeah, 16 and 17 were good years.
Yeah, it was awesome. So where did those quail come from? Because you didn't see any around here. I mean, I'm out and about in it all the time, and you just didn't see any. And then all of a sudden we get a rain, and I guess it's kind of like you guys have been tracking them with the GPS. They could come from anywhere, I guess.
They can, and the thing about quail, they have an ability to persist at really low numbers. Numbers so low that as a hunter, it feels like there are none. Like you go out and you hunt all day and you see one covey or no coveys, and it's just not practical. It's not worth it to people. You know, most people are not going to put that effort forth to see zero coveys or one covey, but they're persistent at those low levels, just waiting for the right weather conditions. And when you get those right weather conditions, they can quickly explode, and they have a lot of different reproductive capacity to do that. They nest multiple times. The males will incubate. They'll put their chicks together. Multiple hens will all congregate their chicks together, and that allows the other hens to go off and nest again. So they're able to crank out a lot of production, and they can essentially double their population in a year.
I believe it.
But it takes 2 or 3 years of that doubling before we get these boom years like you're talking about in 2016-17. So if you think about simple math, if you had a bird per 8 acres, which is low density, from a hunter standpoint, you're not going to be happy at all with that. But if you double, the next year you might have a bird per 4 acres. That's still not great, but maybe it's worth hunting. The next year you have a bird per 2 acres. That's what we had in 2015 and 16. And so that takes about 2 or 3 good years in a row. And the problem is we just don't get 2 or 3 good weather years in a row very often. It might only happen once every 12 or 15 years that we get those conditions line up perfectly. But when it happens, I mean, those are the years that people feed dogs for. No, you know, that's what they're waiting for. We just all wish it happened more frequently.
Our dog sales go up.
And Dwayne, I was talking to Jimmy before the show about just, you know, when we generalize a summer as a mild summer, we're still missing out on some of those key, timely, severe weather events, things like that, that could have drastic impacts.
Right. And it's great.
Absolutely.
If you guys
and also in the winter, too. I mean, like last winter, that February cold snap we had.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that hurt us. That killed a lot of quail. And, you know, that's just unpredictable events that you can't anticipate.
Yep. Well, if you guys are just joining on the show, I have Dwayne Elmore, OSU Extension Wildlife Specialist, and I have Marcus Thibodeau from he's the Wildlife Manager at the WMA at Pack Saddle and Ellis, and he helps out. And we got time for another subject or two, if you got time, Dwayne. And
absolutely.
Turkeys have been in the news really hot for the last year. So these turkey hunters finally have learned what us quail hunters have been going through for 10 years. And you guys are doing some research.
We are. The Wildlife Department has funded a new research project. This is a high priority for the state agency and high priority for a lot of hunters to try to better understand, you know, what's going on with wild turkey. And for those that may travel around and hunt different parts of the state, they're probably aware that birds in the southeastern part of the state have been depressed at pretty low numbers for a while now. I mean, this isn't a recent thing. It's been, you know, 15, 20 years. In the western part of the state, where we have Rio Grande wild turkeys, it's really been in the last 2 or 3 years where hunters have started looking around saying, you know, there aren't as many as there used to be. And so we've got a project that starts in January. We're going to try to get an idea of exactly what's going on and what we can do about it.
Great. I noticed 3, 4, 5 years ago around my house where I live at in central Beckham County, you know, they used to be 100, 200, 500 birds. Now we're seeing flocks of 25 and 50, you know, and that's it. I mean, something did happen. I think it was the hogs myself, but that's just, no, I'm just kidding.
So we had a research project at Pack Saddle going on, and Dwayne was, you know, heavily involved in that during, you know, 2016, 2017, when we had, I mean, Dwayne, how would you classify it? Almost.
Well, when we started that project, When we started that project, Marcus, there were just tons of turkey in and around Pack Saddle, very high density. We had no trouble catching birds. And then that first year, it was almost a complete reproductive failure. Nesting was just zip. And the following year wasn't much better. And at least at Pack Saddle, and I'm not saying this was all of western Oklahoma, but at least at Pack Saddle, it was pretty obvious the issue that it was a poorly timed heavy rain and hail event. And you just got really unlucky, drew the wrong cards at Pack Saddle. And right when all the hens started nesting, they were on nest, big hailstorm came through, and they all abandoned.
Yep.
And most of them didn't re-nest. A few did, but most of them didn't. Second year, it happened again. And it wasn't as dramatic that second year. But you get 2 bust years like that in a row, you can go from having 100 turkeys on your property to having 20 on your property. I mean, that's how quick it happens if you don't get production for 2 years, because turkeys don't generally live very long. You know, a 3 or 4 year old turkey is an old turkey.
Well, Russ Rundle, my partner in crime out here for North Fork Quail Forever, we figured it out. Two things, and I want to run these by you. We figured out that when the turkeys started, population started going down, we figured out that it was the quail eating the turkey eggs to get back at them for all the previous year the turkeys have been eating quail eggs. And then we don't have any scientific proof, but it's a redneck guess.
So, well, I'm going to have to write that down because I've heard a lot of theories on this, but I don't think I've heard that one. I'm going to keep up with it.
I got one more for you. So We figured out how, you know how people want to shut the quail hunting season down, blah, 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 blah. But anyway, so I figured out that if guys will shoot male quail only, that'll help with the population reproduction. Do you think that's a good thing?
Well, they're going to have better eyesight than me to be able to pick them out when they're flushing.
I'm
just lucky if I could just hit one, I'm lucky.
Well, the scientific proof, this sounds like it come about from some 90 proof.
I might have. But anyway, we're running short on time, and I appreciate you so much for coming on. And during the hunting season later in December and January, I hope you'll come back on and we'll talk about how season's going and what you guys are seeing on the hunting side and on your research side, because we really do need some good research on the turkey deal, because, I mean, it went in a hurry.
Yeah.
And there's certain areas, guys, that I still got just as many turkeys. Well, good for you. There's a lot of areas that don't, you know. And in my area where I'm at, we just got, it's just crazy how we went from hundreds down to now we're talking teens. So
it's the only way to get better at our job is through research.
Exactly. And I got two really good guys in here, or one in here and one on the phone with me, that are highly, you're up the chain of command up there. You guys are, everybody worships you. You're doing a good job. We need people like you. So anyway, I don't mean to put you on that big pedestal, Dwayne, you and Marcus, either one, but the research you're doing does matter a lot.
Well, we just, we want the people of the state and the hunters and the landowners to have, most wildlife resources they can. And so we're just happy to help and work with a good team of folks.
All right. Well, you have a great weekend, and I appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you both.
All right. See you guys. Well, you're listening to Today in Ag on 96.5 KECO.
This is Jerry Nine, owner of the Woodward Livestock Auction. First sale last Tuesday, September the 21st. We sold 491 cows, bulls, and calves. Thursday, September the 23rd, we sold 2,229 calves and feeders for a total of 2,720 cattle for the week. Tuesday, better killing cows bring 66 to 77.50. Thin cows bring 51 to 65. Bulls bring 80 up to 99. 2 to 8 year old bred cows 18 to 12.25, with their 9 and older bred cows bringing 900. 2 to 8 year old pairs 1100 to 1535. Hunter steer cattle 3 to 350 weight steers $2 to 212. 4 to 450, 170 to 183. 5 to 550 steers 165 to 167. 6 to 650 yearlings 142 to 156. Off the cow, 6 to 650 steers, 135 to 145. 7 to 750 steers, 136.5 to 150. 8 to 850, 146 to 157. We sold 142 black steers, one bunch, weighing 820, bring 156.25. 9 to 950 steers, 142 to 149, with 1,000 to 1,100 pound steers, 124 to 136. Hunter heifers, 4 heifers weighing 368, bring 160. 4 to 450, 131 to 143. 5 to 550, 136 to 148. 6 to 650 off the cow, 126 to 132. Yearlings, 129 to 143.5. 7 to 750 heifers, 145 to 152.5. 8 to 850, 137 to 139. And our 9 to 950 heifers, 111 up to 123. For this Tuesday, September the 28th, we will have 40 bred cows and pairs. We've got 30 other bred cows, 5 to 8 years old, or by sell time. If you got any calves to sell, send us a video of your kids. We've got several specials lined up. We'll put it on Facebook and also put it in the hallway at the sale barn. Give us a call. We work 100% for the seller. Never lying to the buyer. Thanks again, Jerry Nine and the Woodward Livestock Auction.
From sunup till sundown, we know your irrigation equipment needs to be as hardworking as you, because we all know a farmer's job is never done. Valley is your strength in the field. We're the everyman brand. No matter your operational setup, we have the irrigation equipment and technology to move you forward. Valley products are built to last, easy to operate, and ahead of the curve. Durable, reliable, and built tough. This is Valley.
Contact your local Valley dealer, Knutson Irrigation, 1-800-373-9325, or online at knutsonirrigation.com.
It's so convenient for farmers and ranchers to get what you need in one place. The Wheeler General Store is the do-it-best hardware store that carries vet supplies to doctor your animals, high-pro feed, also master hand milling and smart lick tubs. Delivery is available if you need it. And at Wheeler Ag, right there on site, they've got dry fertilizer application with blending capabilities. Wheeler General Store and Wheeler Ag on Highway 152, a mile east of the four-way stop in Wheeler, Texas.
You can also find the Wheeler General Store on Facebook and Instagram.
This hour's weather is brought to you by Hobart Farm and Garden.
Complete nutrition for every animal. That's what you'll find at High Pro Feeds. At High Pro, their commitment to nutrition is unwavering. Buy the best and get the most out of every animal. Hobart Farm and Garden in Hobart, Oklahoma is your local High Pro Feeds dealer, providing quality feeds in bulk, bags, and sacks. Check them out on Facebook and online at HobartFarmandGarden.com.
The Day in Ag is back with Jimmy Clark.
Woo! Talk about a clock manager. I got time for the weather before the show ends. This Long Ranger forecast brought to you by Hobart Farm and Garden. Today's high 88, tomorrow's 91, Sunday 92, Monday 92, Tuesday 86 degrees and a 30% chance of rain. It's awesome. We got rain back in the forecast, so get that wheat in the ground so it'll come up for something for the army worms to eat when they, next week. Anyway, I'm kidding with you guys. Don't take me serious. Marcus, Dwayne, dude, he just bad to the bone. He knows his stuff.
Big asset to Wildlife of Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, appreciate him coming on and appreciate you coming by the studio. And you're a big asset to Western Oklahoma Wildlife Management.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're good. You're great information. That's where I find out where all the quail are, is through Marcus. And then it's false information he gives me anyway. So I go with a GPS mark and there's nothing there but some shin oaks.
That's right.
But anyway, coming up later on today, Drew Cobb and the Backroad Show this afternoon. That'll he puts on the show. He's one of a kind. I love him. He's my brother from another mother. And anyway, Monday, we'll have what's happening on the ag news from the weekend, today and weekend. And Tuesday, Lacey Swope will be back from her vacation in Colorado. And she didn't even go hunting. That's what makes me mad.
What's the point?
I'll ask her, because I'm going to ask her. But anyway, you guys have a great weekend, and God bless you. I hope you enjoyed the show today, and we'll see you Monday. It's Today in Ag on 96.5 KECO.
Number one for new country.
KECO, Elk City.